The following is a conversation with Magna Gopal. Magna discovered her passion for salsa dancing while studying at the University of Toronto. She pursued a career in dance, which facilitated travel to over 80 countries and allowed her to teach thousands of students across the globe. Magna learned valuable lessons about entrepreneurship, relationships, authenticity, and creativity that she shares with her community within and beyond dance. Magna developed a personal brand that focuses on empowerment through movement, communication, and mindset.
I'm here with Magna Gopal at the 2025 Big Salsa Festival in New York City. It's not a Congress, it's a festival.
It's a festival. I actually don't know the difference between the two.
I don't know either. I don't know if one's supposed to be bigger or not, but so far it's been pretty cool.
I mean, the New York Salsa Congress, way back when, I believe, used to take place in this hotel.
Okay. Like
back in 2005.
Yeah.
So same venue, same rooms, festival and a congress were held in the same place, and both of them packed the spaces. So,
do you know how many congresses they have in New York City?
In New York? Oh, what a tough question. So I just found out this weekend that there is another event happening simultaneously. I think it's a Cuban salsa-centered event. So the fact that we have two on the same weekend tells me there's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we have 52 weekends. Mm. You would think that things could be staggered, but it is also the long weekend, so... You know, of course, everybody wants to get like the best time for the maximum number of people to show up.
Yes, yes. I think the other one is Violin New York.
That sounds familiar, yes.
Yeah, it's a great lineup as well, for sure. So first time we spoke, it's been almost a year ago, and we did a live chat on Instagram, and you shared a lot of interesting insights with me. So one of the things, just to do a quick recap, I guess, as far as how you got into dancing, because you mentioned you watched the movie Dance With Me, I think
yes.
It's called.
Yes.
Then you got curious about dancing. Then you took some classes. Sounds like you were taking some Colombian.
Yep.
Started going to socials and really kind of went from there.
Not even socials, like nightclubs. They didn't have socials at the time. So the nightclubs were full of, you know, every variety of person. You had your hardcore dancers, but you also had your hardcore drunks, you know. So you just never knew who you would get when you were out there. And sometimes the coolest looking people were actually the worst dancers, as was I when I first started dancing. I used to always get like very dressed up, which I know there's always these... criticisms, how come she doesn't dress up more and all this nonsense. But back then I was always in like a dress. And I think people used to look at me and say, oh, she must be a good dancer. And then they come and ask me to dance and realize, nope, she cannot dance. So that was my experience as well when I was going out all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one unique thing about what you shared previously is that you learned pretty much on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you said you barely practiced or didn't practice at all. All of it came from social dancing, mm-hmm. or dancing in general. And you said you were hyper analytical, I believe, the term that you used. Take me through this process. How did it work for you?
Of being hyper analytical?
Well, hyper analytical in the sense that how did that learning process took place? Meaning, did you just always continue to learn as you dance, and what was going through your mind?
So I would attribute the hyper analytical nature to a very innate nature of curiosity that I have. I'm childlike. I have a childlike curiosity. And if you look at kids when they get curious with something, they explore every aspect of it. You know, if you give them a toy and it's supposed to just be bounced, you might find this kid like trying to peel it apart. Well, we didn't know that that's something that you could do with a toy, or that it can actually stick in certain places, right? So when you get curious about something, when you get really intensely focused hyper interested in something, you start to explore it in different ways beyond how it was presented to you. And I feel that that's been my approach to not just dance, but anything I've found interesting. I'll give you the example. During COVID, there was QFit that I started running. So I did 60 days of workouts every day live on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. Mm-hmm. And then after continued that program for, I think, 15 months as a paid program for the membership-based. And in that program, like, I would work out at the gym. It was pretty basic what I would do. But through that program, I came up with all sorts of exercises because I got so invested in, like, what can the body do? I can't go dancing, right? I don't have a partner here to practice with. But what can my body do? What are all the ways I can do something with it with minimal equipment, with without having access to a gym, without being outside, right? And how can I keep other people interested? And that was one of the things about the QFit program, which is still available online on my website. But everyone was like, I don't know where you come up with these exercises. You know, we had like one exercise that was called Rabid Donkey, right? That was challenging your shoulder strength, your ability to invert, your core strength, mobility, agility, balance, like all these things. So dance has been the same thing for me. I got into it. I fell in love with it, and then I just wanted to understand every part of it, particularly that revolved around connection. And I feel like I need to clarify that because I don't know if we talked about this in our last interview, but you know, sometimes people say, oh, how come you don't know the history of salsa? How come you don't know, like, Cuban salsa and all of these other elements of it? And like, well, that's hasn't been my focus. My focus was purely on physical connection with my partner and being able to read them. And I actually don't need any of that background to be able to do that. You know, but I've dived into this in a much deeper way than other people who dance socially, for example.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't performed or competed, right?
I performed, yeah.
You performed?
I performed from the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you've been doing it.
But I mean, I haven't in a while.
Yeah.
It's weird to say I'm like retired because I'm not near that age. I hope nobody ever thought that I was close to that age. But yeah, the performances, I kind of stopped doing that maybe 2025, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Competitions, I have competed in kind of like friendly competitions, mm-hmm. you know, where they have like social dancing, Jack and Jill's,
yes.
like that, but not like the World Salsa, I don't know what they're called, but championships or something like that. I have not done competitions on that level, mm-hmm. but something more fun. Yeah. And I did compete in a West Coast swing competition as an absolute beginner. And manage with the worst technique on Friday, but good enough technique to get to the finals unanimously mm-hmm. on Sunday. But again, interest, right? Like I really liked it. I had so much fun. The people were entertaining. The music was great. I knew the songs. I was allowed to dance to these songs in a partner dance versus just solo dancing. And I was determined to understand it. I was like, I'm going to be here for this entire weekend. I'm not planning on going to other events, so I'm going to make the most out of this. I'm going to get the most out of it. I'm going to try and give back the most to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Friday, I think I was doing cha-cha steps, basic steps. And then the judges were like, oh yeah, that's not the step. I'm like, okay, take some of the classes and then put that into my mind when I was social dancing at night. Like, yes, it's fun, but I want to get better. So don't be casual and lackadaisical about it. And then by Sunday, competed and managed to get to finals.
It works.
Yeah, it absolutely works. But you gotta want it, you know. You gotta want more than what you're given.
Mm. So with this way of learning, was this always sort of sporadic? Did you have some checklist that you would go over, or I'm just curious how it worked, because you said there was more in the moment type of deal. So in the moment, I'll tell you why I'm asking is because in the moment, what helps me videos, for example, because when I have a video of myself dancing, I can actually see, okay, here I'm not doing this or I'm doing this too much. So it's easy for me because I visually can see it, because in the moment I could be really connecting with another person. Mm-hmm. And I know I would not be able to recall a lot of things if I was just trying to recall it by memory. So that's why I was wondering how you did it, because obviously you still had quite a bit of videos, I believe, as well, right? But that's not how...
Not how I started.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm in my 40s.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay, because I feel like you should know that like 20 years ago, 25 years ago,
yeah,
we didn't really have videos,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I mean, if somebody recorded you,
yeah,
it was on... an actual physical device that needed to be transferred to a computer before you ever got a chance to see it. And nobody did that. You know, it was so rare. That's why you would have, what was it, VHSs from Congresses. You know, they would put something out because who the hell is walking around with these big devices? So videos were not an option.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't something I could like go out and dance, record myself, come back and see it, review it. It really was just, if it was a checklist, then the checklist was make sure I go out.
Yeah.
And then once I got there, the checklist was ask, keep asking. Oh, we didn't get that dance? Keep asking. And that's what I would say the checklist was. And then the internal checklist, once I get the dance, was what are you doing? What do you remember? What feels off? How can you micro correct yourself so that that doesn't feel off? Like you're going to dance with this person again, or you feel like something that they gave you, a move that they led on you, is very similar to something they led 30 seconds before. Why is this different? You know? Or if you mess that up, how can you do it better this time? All right, so if I extended too far and felt pain. All right. Well, next time I feel like he's pushing me back, I'm not going to take as big of a step.
Mm.
Right.
But with some of these things, normally feedback like that, how did you know what was right and what was not right? Because I think with some of these things, the feedback comes from an instructor or somebody who, you know, you've been working with, somebody who's been teaching you, right? Maybe it's not a formal instructor, but somebody who is your specific coach. But in the beginning for you, were you just self-evaluating, I mean, based on what you knew and kind of went from there?
Well, I didn't know much, right? So to clarify, I didn't know much. I got on to the dance floor, danced with people without even knowing the proper timing. I was pretty much just fucking around, you know? And as for the feedback coming from an instructor, like, it's interesting that you say that, because I think sometimes we start to limit our ability to grow, explore, reflect, and revise when we think feedback is external only. Like, we don't take the time to reflect ourselves. And when the feedback comes from an instructor or somebody else, it's their way, right? It's kind of their way. Like, if something feels, if an instructor says, this is how you should lead a spin, and the lead is strong. Now, I'm going out there as a leader, and I'm leading a spin, and I'm strong. And I see the feedback. The feedback in the moment is the follower's arm collapses, her face, she winces. That's feedback. But if I've heard from somebody else, this is the way it's done, who's giving me feedback that this is right, then why would I reflect? Why would I change anything, even though I'm getting feedback in the moment that it's not? Right? So I'm kind of glad I didn't get any feedback, because most of the feedback, and it wasn't feedback per se, but most of the comments, right? And they were friendly. But it was like, oh, you know, you're doing too much of this. You're doing too much of that. You know, that's not how salsas dance. If I listened to all of that, I would be in a box. You know, I would be just another variation of all the dancers out there. I would have never explored all of these other things that I've had a chance to explore and introduce into this community, right? So feedback is good. Feedback is definitely great if you got someone who's more knowledgeable, but you have to always be open to what is the feedback in the moment. Because even your instructors, whatever they're telling you, they are telling you from their experience. And if they tell you to do something a certain way, it's because they are in that space doing things that way. Like even our biggest name instructors, how many people do you think they social dance with? Right? They are probably spending most of their time practicing, rehearsing with their own dancers. So they are even more firm about the technique. Whereas they're teaching that technique to someone who's going to go out and dance with 50 people this night and then another 50 people tomorrow, right? It's different. Like, you have to be open. You got to take everything with a grain of salt and always be open-minded to the feedback, and not just open-minded and receptive, but curious about what feedback is coming your way. And I think that's one thing I've done from the start, and I still do today, right? I did it in the start because I didn't know. I do it now because I know that's what I should do.
Mm-hmm. So you never had second thoughts about what is correct or if I'm doing it correctly?
Oh, I had plenty of thoughts about whether I'm doing it correctly, because I would have a lot of disconnect, you know, with these people that I'm dancing with. And if somebody said something, I was always open to hearing it. I would definitely take it in. But a big part of the dance for me has been, how do you move with someone seamlessly, effortlessly, fluidly, in harmony? And you don't need technique, you don't need timing, you know, you don't need the strict nature of the dance to be able to do that. We do that every day. You know, if we started walking down the street, if I didn't know you and we started, we just met crossing the paths, and we started walking down the street and you walk really fast and I'll walk really slow, I promise you that we will walk at the same tempo. We will find a way to synchronize with each other because there's a desire to connect that dominates everything else we're doing. So dance, I feel, is the same. And that's why with dance, you know, some people say, oh, like dancing with somebody who's off time, right, is painful. I'm like, no, you just got to try and, if you try and connect with them, the timing, you find your way around that. You know, but if you limit yourself, that timing is the only way. If you don't have the timing, you cannot connect, then you've limited yourself, your ability to connect with someone, you know? It's like a vocabulary, a language, but we all speak so many different languages. We have so many different words in our vocabulary. You know, just because I don't have the same, speak the same language as you does not mean I can't understand you. It doesn't mean that we can't communicate, right?
So this is a very interesting concept that you brought up, because I know you mentioned the connection and importance of connection in our first chat, which is, by the way, if you haven't seen that live talk, highly, highly recommend it. A lot of great insights there. And so with connection, if there is no structure, especially for somebody who's new, who's relying on structure, what are your thoughts on that? How they should even perceive connection if they don't have structure?
So this is probably the hardest thing to relay to people. And it's because there's so much instruction available. Even when I was dancing, there was so much instruction available. I just happened to be kind of this oddball who started going out all the time. But most of the people I was friends with in Toronto, they were in school, they were in classes, they would travel, take lessons with someone from another city, and then come back and instruct everybody else. And they would exchange that information often. So I'm a bit of an oddball there. And today we have so many schools, so many dance teams. You know, there is no end to how many places you can go to learn. So everything becomes about structure. It's hard to, at this point, get people to think about connecting with another human being as the primary motive to be in a social dance, in a partner dance environment, right? It's like, since you're, we're the same age, yeah? So it's kind of like social media. Like, you talk to people who are 20 years old and say, oh, you know, why don't you just go outside? Well, put, leave your phone at home. Leave my phone at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to go outside with nothing. We'd pick up rocks and sticks and make a whole game out of it.
Right.
Right? But who, they can't do that now because right. they forgot about the creativity in the mind to make something out of nothing, whatever is around you. And just find a way to connect with the person next to you, with whatever you have. Right. And today we have so much and we can't connect with the people next to us. Mm-hmm. Right. So not to say that that's what the dance is, but I think that it's hard to bring that into the equation when there's such an emphasis on competitions, which require a strict adherence to structure.
Right. Right.
When there's so much emphasis on performances, which also require everything to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
right? The perfect execution. And the social dancing, it has become very secondary or tertiary. You know, it's not the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I guess back then, people would perform, but I mean, every performer was on the dance floor immediately. I mean, hell, like there were performers who were dancing in their costume before going to perform. Mm-hmm. And then right after dancing a little bit and saying, oh, you know, I should change my costume before I ruin it. Right? That the social dancing was a big part of the community back then.
Right.
And so connection, right, with another person was important, more important.
Yes. So you're not the first person who emphasized the importance of connection, and I'm a true believer in it. The thing about it is, with performances, like you said, there's a very strict aspect when it comes to technique. Same thing with competition, even more so. With social dancing, connection is not really taught. Like if you're going to go to, like, I'm judging based on my experiences. Mm-hmm. When you go to different studios in Orlando, they're going to teach you patterns mostly.
Yep.
They're going to teach you, hopefully, music if you're lucky. They're going to teach you some other technical component. But like connection is an afterthought. So I'm with you on the fact that connection is extremely important and it's probably undertaught. But I'm still coming back to kind of our original question, because if you're a new dancer, everywhere you go, you've been told how to step. And you've been told 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7. And so when you come to social dance or a club or anywhere, I think in your mind, you should be doing 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7.
Right. So what you just said about instructors and schools, your experiences, mine as well, what I've observed, this was actually, I can't remember which live chat of mine that I talked about this, but there is an onus, there's agency for a student. You have to want to explore something, again, beyond what is given to you. That's you. No one can make you interested and no one can make you feel inspired. No one can make you dedicated, or that has to come from within. If you are someone who is like, okay, well, I'm just going to take classes and then I'm going to dance with those people and this is what I'm going to do because that's what I learned, and not question anything, not experiment, right? Not try to fail, actually,
mm-hmm.
right? Not try to succeed and fail. Try to fail. Make some mistakes. Go do something that you are certain it won't work. And maybe it actually does end up working, right? That's some of the stuff I started doing. But just go and have fun, right? Because I can't make it fun for you. I can give you tools to have fun. There's the same tools I'm using to have fun.
Right.
I can't make you happy. I can't make you have fun. You have to explore that. You have to pursue that yourself, right? So I think there's that element too that is missing now. Back, I hate saying that, God, like back in the day. But I want to say, I'm emphasizing it because it allowed me to focus on connection. Because there wasn't everybody was like, just wanted to social dance. Social dancing was of prime importance for almost everyone I knew, instructors and just regular dancers alike. But back then, I feel like, you know, you could take a class, but you were always like, oh, I want to try what I learned, you know, immediately.
Yes.
But you're already in the space outside. You're not recording a video so you never watch it for the next 10 years, right? You don't have a video, actually, right? You have nothing to record. The only way for you to have that information ingrained in your body is to practice it and try it out. And I remember after workshops, right, someone would try something like, oh, Magna, let me try something with you. And then after me, they're like, did that work? I'm like, yeah, well, that was a little bit rough. Oh, let me try it again. And then we'd see another person. Oh, let me try it with you. You would already be trying to connect what you learn with multiple people. Whereas now it's like, okay, I don't get anything in the class. I'm not going to ask any questions to clarify for myself because I don't want to look stupid like the person who doesn't know, even though questions are great. And I say questions are great because for instructors, we're always teaching from what we know. Right? The challenges we face. I don't know your challenges until you tell me you have a challenge. So I appreciate questions. When someone says, what do you mean by that? Maybe I never thought about it because it was so obvious to me. So I appreciate those questions, but students don't even ask anything. Right? So that element of like, of having agency of your own learning and agency over your own enjoyment and not expecting that any teacher or any school or any dance group can give that to you, hopefully, right, for a new dancer, should give you like, all right, this is how I'm going to approach this. You know, this is the information I'm getting. These are the tools I can use, but the drive must come from within. And if I look at any dance floor, I can see, even if it's all beginners, I can see there is much more on this dance floor than what I was just taught. There's much more on this Congress dance floor, festival dance floor tonight, you know, than what I have seen in all my years of dancing. That's where curiosity comes. It's not saying I've been here, done that, I know everything. It's I've been around, I've done a lot, I don't know everything, what's new? That's the approach. And I think a beginner dancer can adopt that approach too.
So going off of that, if you had your own studio, how would you teach connection?
Oh, if I had my own studio, I would not have drop-in classes, first of all. My classes would not be even 1 month or 2 months. It would be like a school year. Or a semester, at least. I want commitment. I can't give you I've had it even with private lessons. I've had students come and sign up for 10 hours, you know, and they're like, oh, well, I'm learning from Magna Powell. You're like the best social dancer. I was expecting to be the best social dancer after 10 hours, right? Like, and I was like, what, through osmosis? Like, here. You know,
you touch me. I'm going to be amazing tonight.
I mean, I wish I could, right? I mean, who wouldn't want that power or be able to even like drink from the fountain of youth and say, okay, I'm blessed for life. But I had given like these students exercises, simple exercises. Like I want you to take these patterns that you've learned, break them into eight counts. I'm sure you've learned tons of them, and they were taking classes from prominent instructors in the city. I'm like, just grab 5 8 counts, rearrange them, okay, and then come back to me. And they never did the homework. And then they were like, well, you know, I just feel like I thought I'd know more. I was like, but you didn't do more, right? Like, I can't make you become who you want to be. You must want it enough to pursue it. And then I can give you tools and information and guidance and redirect you if you're veering off course, you know. But I can't make you step. I can only show you a path. And that's a problem.
The example that you just gave me about people did not want to rearrange a few counts, is that hypothetical or is it actually...
Oh, no, it's real.
Happened?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
It was a simple exercise, but... And the reason was because my student felt frustrated that he didn't feel like himself. You know, he was trying to remember all these patterns, and he was very diligent about practicing, recording, reviewing. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, how are you going to know if you're good at leading something if you're only able to practice it in a certain sequence with a certain people? So let's change something, right? This is your environment. What can we change? We can't change the people. You see them all the time, right? Obviously, they know. You can change the sequence. What can we change, right? You're scared to go out to the other social dances, social events where there are people not in your class. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to do that. You want to stay in that environment. What can we change, mm-hmm. right? You need to do that, though. I'm not going to do that for you. And it doesn't mean anything if I do it, because I will get better at it and you will still be where you're at. Mm-hmm. You know, but that simple exercise, 5 counts. And this person had been taking classes for almost a year with 3 to 4 classes a week, right? Or sorry, yeah, like 1-2 hours each time. That's a lot of things you're learning, right? And if you're not willing to, that's what I'm saying, you're getting all of this, you have to want more than what you're getting, what you're presented.
That makes me think of something that I have experienced too, because it still happens to me. It's like I sometimes try to do things the way I learned it. And I would execute a pattern like from Hammerlock, and I would do certain 2 to 3 moves. And it's sometimes I'm trying to like get out of it, like, oh no, like I catch myself doing it. I'm like, oh no. But it's like, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's, I think, I see a sort of a benefit to learn and to get some things in your head. But I also think if that's the only way you can do it, it becomes
a crutch.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it, right? I'm not discouraging anyone who's listening, watching. You know, I'm not discouraging you from taking classes. I think it's great that we have so much instruction out there. I don't think it was like this back then, right? So I think it's great. Like, definitely go and take lessons and practice where you get to meet people too, right?
Yeah.
These are now students in your class that are your peers that you don't have to be as shy about when you meet them in a social, versus me going to a lot of the socials, not knowing anybody and just kind of being like, you know, it's great. But don't limit yourself. That's my entire message is, don't limit yourself, because everyone who comes to me saying I feel limited does not acknowledge that the limit is self-imposed. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Yes.
You know, there's such a dependency on the instructor. There's such a dependency on a school, on other people making your journey have value, making you enjoy what you're doing, making you progress and grow and get creative, and zero acknowledgement of the agency you have in that space to actually pursue those things yourself. Like, no one else can do it for you.
Yeah. And I think a body works in a very interesting way, because I think if you practice Suzy Q, you know, 8 count, and you always do, you know, half to the right, half to the left, or vice versa, I think this is how your brain is going to be wired. I think it's a self exploration type of journey. If you go 3 counts to the right and then right turn instead.
Yep.
And you tried something new, like you said.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do Suzy Q into the right turn.
Right.
Or something else. And then all of a sudden, it's no longer about any pattern. You're breaking a pattern. It's exactly about allowing your body to feel the movement and then realizing that you can be free.
Right,
that,
right, you know? Right, exactly. It's about allowing yourself to explore freedom of creativity, like being in a place where everything you know is in your sandbox. You know, nothing. You're not in class. You're not in a test.
Yeah.
You're just in a playground. You know, and everything that your instructor tosses to you is just another toy. Mm-hmm. Your choice how you want to arrange them, your choice which one you want to play with today, you know. But I would say one of the easiest ways to explore self, like your personal expression is to rearrange. And it doesn't have to be a lot. Just take one thing out of there and put something else in there. You know, just in the mix and see how well you do with it. And if you don't do well immediately, then there you go, right? Here's something that you can work on. And if you got it really quickly, then make it more complicated. Like that was, I'll go back to QFit because fitness wasn't something I ever approached. I just did it for myself. But here I was now doing it like I was with salsa. I was teaching other people. I was providing to other people. And so I wanted to make them as excited about it as I was, right? So with like push-ups, right? First time, yeah, okay, everything was like a regular push-up. Then the push-ups became staggered, you know, or deficit push-ups. Or with a slider, with a sock where you would like push up and slide your hand. There's so many ways to do push-ups, right? But we end up just doing this. And this is great. It's a great workout. But you're really only going to work certain muscles. You'll never be able to hit everything unless you try to explore more things. And when you explore, you're like, wow, I thought I was strong here, but I'm actually weak here. And once you get stronger there, then all of a sudden it just opens up another door. It's like playing a video game, right? Like all you advance to the next level and you're like, wow, I got armor and I got a sword now. I don't have to fight with a wooden stick anymore, right? But you got to pursue it.
Yeah. You have to at least give it a try.
Yeah. And not at least give it a try. It's not that even. It's you got to keep trying.
Yeah.
It's not a one-off. And that's the most important thing. It's really not a one-off. You just got to keep on trying. Otherwise, why, right? Why this?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny that the timing of this conversation, because I think I'm on that cusp. I'm on the cusp of coming to socials and trying to let go, in the sense that I just, like a lot of times I just, you know, dance to the music. Sometimes right. It's cool to just stand there and just groove to the music by yourself.
Right.
And then a few times when I do something that was not planned on the dance floor, I like celebrate it. It's like, yes, like I did something without thinking about it or pre-planning a move, you know. And that's like the best feeling ever, because I think that's what real improvisation and real connection, in a sense of connecting your body to the music,
is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many times that I've had dances with certain people, and my highlights for those dances are the moments where my partner is like, oh shit, like what happened there, you know? Like that. I feel proud of that moment because some of these people I've known for years, I've danced with them for years, and I'm glad that I can still surprise them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's beautiful. Right. That's like so beautiful in this dance. And I wished we approached it more like that, like where you really looked at, like, you don't get complacent with connection, because I think we're getting to that part, too. And I would liken that to romantic relationships, even more than friendships. Right. Where you're like, I'm good here. Right. Whatever this is, however it started, I was curious initially. Now I'm good. I'm comfortable. I don't need to keep on learning about you. I like what I know. But is that relationship going to grow, or is it going to become stale?
Yes.
And who's losing? Both of you. You know? So likewise, our dances are like five minutes that represent 5 years, you know? And if we can look at those moments and approach them with that, like, let me surprise you, right? What am I surprised by? You know, what is something new about you, the person that I've danced with every weekend for the past 10 years at socials? What is something that's new about you? Because there is something new. If I can't see it, it's not because it doesn't exist. It's because I am choosing not to look for it. So,
is it because you're choosing not to look for it, or is it because they're choosing not to show it to you?
Oh, you can always find it. You can always find something new and different about you. You can find something to get tuned into. I could like just now, right? As I'm thinking about this thought, I'm like, why are you, you know, scratching your neck? Like, is it itchy, right? Or is it your hand? Or I'm curious, what is it, right? I could start asking questions. Right. We could dive into that,
yeah.
Right? People can hide things. They might not want to show you something, but that doesn't stop you from being curious about them. Right. That doesn't stop you from asking questions.
Yeah.
And observing and being like hyper-focused on that person, yeah. And revealing yourself to invite them to share.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of it. And I think that's even more important when you're more advanced as a dancer. Like if you're more comfortable, confident in your technique and your skills, then you open the doors, right? This person might not want to open the door. Maybe they're scared of what's on the other side. You got to open the door. You got to take the step through, show them it's safe, and then invite them, not drag them, not push them, but invite them.
How do you invite somebody?
I usually laugh and joke. I mean, I use humor a lot to my advantage when it comes to connecting with someone, especially someone who feels nervous. That's one way. If I see them doing something, I mimic them. That's like mirroring somebody is also a natural human, a device for connecting with another person, right? In the animal kingdom, right? It's like mimicking.
Yeah. Can you mimic some Russian salsa moves?
I can try to mimic anything. Whether I succeed at doing it properly, you know, that's to that's going to be for somebody else. But I mean, considering I've danced with Russian salsa dancers, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I would mimic, yeah. You know, if I saw somebody doing something, I would, especially if if I've never danced with them and they're doing something that I've never really done, I would try and do it.
You know, I now more than anything out of this weekend, I want somebody to film a social dance and I will just pull some folkloric Russian move.
As long as it's not that drop, my knees aren't good, but like to drop down and do that. I could do that before 10 years ago. If you did that, I would have gotten you back. Except the last time I think I did that was at Jimmy Anton's social, because my friend who does Taekwondo, like triple black belt in Taekwondo, at the end of the night, I was just about to leave. And he's like, oh, why are you leaving? You know? And he dropped down into a squat, but he's wearing sweatpants.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you think, you know, you're like, you're so young, I could do that too. I dropped down into a squat and ripped my pants. And I had to go home. And it was a terrible experience. So there's some things that I'm very mindful of, you know, clothing.
Well, we'll practice. I can show you what I have in mind, and then we can, you know.
No practice. Determine. Because you see, then people are like, oh, she knew that. He had already shown it to her. I still remember there was some dance with, I can't remember who it was. Maybe Terry or something with someone who I had never danced with. And they're like, oh, the only reason they're so connected is because they've danced many times before. And I was like, that was my first dance with this person. What are you talking about, right? But then even if you say it's your first dance with someone, there's always somebody commenting and saying, no, it doesn't matter what she says, right? That's not her first dance. So no rehearsal. We will just do whatever we do on the dance floor.
You would not be Magna if you wanted to rehearse. Well taken. So we'll just have to play by ear. So one thing I wanted to do is kind of present, not challenges, but considerations, I guess, when it comes to dance. And I'm curious your take on it, given everything that we already discussed. Because I think dance is so incredible because there are so many parts of it. And each given part can be so deep and is so deep, mm-hmm. Right? So we talked about connection a lot, and I think, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud because I think there's many different ways to go about this, but it seems to me that first, connection with your body is a must, whether you do it through practice or how you did it, which is Unenigma, by the way.
in many ways. So, which is great, which is great. But the way that I perceive it is like, I need to connect with my body to know how to move my body, to find my center, to be efficient at movement in order for me to feel then that I can connect with music, because to me, that's kind of a natural progression. If I don't connect with music, then what am I doing? I'm just moving for the sake of moving. And then, which hopefully will allow me then connect with my partner, because the progression is I should be able to control my body, then connect with the music, then connect with a partner to the full extent. What are your thoughts on this? Like, do you ever thought about approaching it step by step that way? Or
I think that my approach to it would be, it's more circular to me. You know, I'm gonna refer to like project management, right? They have waterfall mm-hmm. project management, and then they have agile project management. So in waterfall project management, you decide, you make a plan, and then you start working on it, and then you finish, and you really try it your best not to deviate from that plan. But in agile, the whole idea is to reiterate, to do it quickly, and to reiterate, get feedback, improve whatever you need to do, put it out there, do it again, and over and over and over, right? So discovering your body, connecting with your own body, connecting with the music, connecting with your partner, it is not linear. It is circular. You know, you discover your body, you end up connecting with the music, you start dancing with a partner, you discover your body more in that process, right? Then maybe you're connecting with a partner, you're like, oh, through my partner, I discover the music, right? So it's constantly cycling through those. And that's why I don't prescribe a certain path. Like, I think for this dance, ideally, it would be great to understand the basics, right? What is the timing? Because that's the language. That's what we're trying to connect through, that language. So if you know it, it's just going to give you an advantage getting in there. So the basic, the timing. Listen to music just to get an idea of what the tempos are like. How quickly must you execute that basic? Right, because when we do 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, that's pretty easy. When the song comes on, it's actually 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, right? It's much faster. Can you execute? Mm-hmm. So at least get those two. Then get a general understanding of some basic movements with a partner, to connect with a partner. And your discovery of your own body is going to change with every partner. It's going to change with every move, even with the same partner. It's going to change with every song or part of a song with the same move with the same partner, right? There's really nothing, and I know I've said this one before, there's no moment, there's no second that repeats itself, right? Complacency is a choice. Things are changing. They're always changing. They never stop changing. And it's really, that's what I mean about what is the novelty? Something is new. There's something, and it's not even one thing. It is many things. What is new, right? Because as soon as you identify what's new, you can start to explore its impact. But if you cannot identify what's new, you cannot understand how you or your partner or whatever, how you're interacting with that thing, right? It's the identification of it that allows you, gives you the ability to dive deeper. Mm-hmm. But to identify it, you must be curious, because it is very easy to get into a routine, to identify the things that we know, that we've been told to identify. What's the timing? Oh, okay. I know that. But that's not what it's about. You know, it's really about looking at, okay, let's say we danced every weekend, you know, for 10 years, and we go to the same social, same DJ and everything. Something is different. What could it be? You know, maybe you just came back from a festival, mm-hmm. right? And you had a great interview with somebody and you're feeling inspired. That's different. And somewhere in your dance, it's going to show. Can I see that? Can I feel that? And once I do, what can I do with that? How did that impact me? And how can I give that back to you? It's like, it's a lot of questions, right? I think my approach is really lots of questions. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always encourage like students that just ask questions of your instructors, ask questions of yourselves, you know, ask questions of your partner within moderation, because that's not what the dance floor is for, right? Like, unless you're someone you practice with, but ask questions, like constantly reflect, like what went well, what didn't go well, what did I like, what did I dislike? You know, what was my partner giving to me? Did I even interpret that correctly? Was my interpretation of what my partner was sending off to me accurate, right? Like, how many times do we dance with somebody and say, oh, wow, like so much attitude. And that person was nervous as hell, right? They were they're a total introvert. They just got into dance, you know, they're very good. They're methodical about their approach. So they're good technically. And so they're advanced, but they're still introverted. Their personality is an introvert. Right, they're quiet, they're shy, they're nervous still, even though they're good. And here we are thinking that they're assholes because they're not socializing the way we are, right? Like, so it's not just about, okay, what can I do better, but am I interpreting what's around me correctly? That was rough. Was it rough? Or was I losing my frame in that moment? It can be either or, and it can be both. You know, it's not always one way.
Right.
Right. And that's the idea of exploration. That's the idea of questioning things. And that's what makes you better.
When we spoke last year, you emphasized the importance of smile. If you have a new dancer in front of you, a new lead who can barely dance, who's super nervous, but smiles, do you think it's sufficient?
Yeah. But also, you know, like, let me course correct that a little bit, okay? Because even the smiles are, it's a socialization that we are used to, that I am used to, because I feel very comfortable around people. But I have come to meet many people who are not as comfortable around people. And smiling doesn't come naturally, not because they're not happy, not because they don't feel joy, not because they don't want to connect with the person, but because they just doesn't come naturally, right? And then I watched this show, Love on the Spectrum on Netflix. Oh my God, what a great show. Like, I think every dancer should watch this show. Any partner dancer, social partner dancing, should watch this show. Because you see the way they talk to each other, right? They're all on some level of autism. And me, looking at them, watching their behavior in these dates, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, if I was with that person, I would totally think they weren't interested. They go back home to their family, they're like, oh my God, I think I'm in love. Right? But there's nothing about their mannerisms, about the tone of their voice, about the intonation and inflection, or their posture or their facial expression. Nothing to me would have communicated interest. Right? So how wrong can we be? Right? That's the idea, like, with connection with another person is not just about, like, I'm right about something, because we're always looking for affirmation and validation. That what I thought was accurate, what I thought was right. But how wrong can you be? And can you accept that? And what can you do to change that, right? So the smile stuff, right? It's important. And it's great when it shows up. And if there's somebody who's smiling and they don't have their basics or anything like that, I'm okay with that. But I also don't expect it. It's a nice to have, but it is not mandatory, because that might not come naturally to you. And who am I to project my personality on you and expect you to do the same, right? I will give you of myself, for sure. And if I elicit something out of you, like a smile and a lightness, mm-hmm. great. And if I don't, no problem, you know? I'm going to try and go off of the feel, because yeah. there's a lot that the face doesn't need to communicate. The faces do not need to communicate. That touch can.
Mm-hmm.
Touch can tell me if you're comfortable, you know? And through touch alone, without even the smiles, I can make you more comfortable. And we know this when we get a hug.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not even like, oh, what are you talking about? Touch or anything. It's as simple as a hug, or as simple as like someone's like sad and you're like, you know, you put your hand on them, but you send your emotions to them and it changes the way they feel. Mm-hmm. You know, they could still be crying, but you can tell that they're like a little bit more relaxed.
Right. Couple more things. I know. No, we're approaching. Wow, it's almost an hour, so gotta wrap up here. Wow, I was like in a trance. Good, good, really good. We spoke about vertical ladder.
Yes.
You remember that concept you explained to me? So vertical ladder, you were saying that this is not a linear ladder for advanced dancers. If you're an advanced dancer, if you think you are, you should be able to move up and down the vertical ladder in a jazz to whomever you dance with. I'm curious, I guess, about a couple of things. Did you create this on the fly when we spoke, or you you created it on the fly?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think either I did or I had recently just spoken about it. But I can't remember if it was with you first or in a live chat after, or in a live chat before. But I know I did mention it again in a live chat, but I don't know if that came first and then I said it to you or if it was first with you.
I really love this concept of vertical ladder. Can you explain it one more time? And I guess why you believe it's that way is the way?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we think about our journey, sometimes the way it's presented is as if we are starting here and then going in this direction, which means maybe we're not really coming back here for any reason. And so you start as a beginner and then you leave this box and you move to this one. And now you're an intermediate and you leave this box and you move to that one. And so if you dance with a beginner, it's so far away, right? Like you're in such a different space that this doesn't make sense anymore to you. Whereas when you approach it as a ladder, it's like this is the first rung. And for you to have climbed to the second rung, you have to be able to do this rung properly. You have to pass this rung to get to that one. And then after that, same thing to advanced. So the further you go, you actually have a very clear view of what you just went through. Mm-hmm. And ascending and descending that ladder feels much easier than traversing this distance, you know? I mean, you could also come back, right? But I just feel like a ladder, because you don't really think of a ladder as, okay, I'm going to go up and I'm going to hang out here. You think of a ladder as something you ascend and descend often,
right?
Whereas if you are on a journey going somewhere, who knows when you're coming back?
Right.
But a ladder is something you're like, okay, I got to go up. Oh no, I got to pick up some more tools. Oh, now I got to go a little bit higher to make that fix this or fix that, right? You're constantly going back and forth. And that is what we should be doing, especially the more advanced we are. That should be easy. Mm-hmm. And if it's not easy, then are we really as good as we think we are? Is the question, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, at the end of the day, the only one who can answer that is you. Like, if no one else can answer it. But goes back to not just the how right am I, how many things am I doing right, but how wrong could I be? Because you might think you are super advanced. What if you were completely wrong about that? How would you approach that? What would you do differently, right?
Well, and if you are truly that advanced and you not willing to go down that ladder, what does it say? Does it say that you're not willing to be, to have humility to come down that ladder to actually meet somebody where they at?
Yeah, absolutely. It like, so there's so many things, right? Like, that's what I mean about how wrong could you be? Mm-hmm. And this is new. This is a today moment. Because I feel like all of this is coming to me now, and I don't recall ever saying this before in this way. But there is that question of how wrong could I be? And I think I would say probably in this past year and a half, maybe, and it's not even all dance related, it is actually just asking that question, how wrong could I be, that has helped me get through a lot of moments. Because it's easy to find where I'm right. It's really easy because my bias and my ability to contort things, I can make myself right, you know? We can always look at those situations where like, oh yeah, you share it with a friend and your friend's like, fuck that person, right? They're always on your side. They can always find a way to tell you you were completely right about what you did. But what if you asked yourself, like, how wrong could I be? What if I was wrong about all of this? How would that change you? You know, those are some pretty transformative changes. When we ask that question, we come up with an answer, because it's difficult to encounter. It's difficult to face. And I think in the dance, if we can ask that beforehand, you know, that I can be really wrong about everything I'm about to like perceive. So let me check myself, you know, and try and approach this with minimal judgment and try to bring my best and understand that even that is a work in progress, you know, then we can build better connections. Like, I'll give the example of rough dances, right? That's come up quite a bit. And again, to clarify, I'm speaking about just rough dances, not abusive, not anything beyond that, just rough dances. I know in the past, when I would dance with somebody who was rough, it was very easy to point the finger. They were rough. Everybody would dance with them, would say, oh, like that person's so heavy, like my arm feels like it's gonna get broken. If I leave it at that, right? Like, it's your fault. This dance is rough because of you, right? I'm right. Everyone would say I'm right to say that. But when I ask myself, like, what if I'm wrong about that? What if this dance sucked because of me? Not because you're rough, but because I'm not good. Now all of a sudden I start to look at myself, how could I develop my frame? How can I counter all of this energy and this tension? And you know what? I became a better dancer for that question. Now there's no rough dancers. None. You know? And it's all because of, not saying that they're not rough. I am certain, like, you know, 9 out of 10 people or everybody other than me that they dance with might say, ah, oh, it's too strong, too strong. But for me, they don't feel like that because when I dance with them, I have a different dance dynamic with them, you know? And I always say, like, how I dance with Terry, for example, is not the way I dance with Super Mario. I'm a different dancer to these different people. So with a rough lead, I am a different dancer with them than someone who's very soft. But I would never have become that, explored that part of myself if I thought that you are wrong and I have no part to play in that. No part to play in the betterment of the outcome.
I think this is a great place to conclude this amazing conversation. Anything you would like to add in closing? And of course, please remind people where they can find you and where they can, you know, train with you or learn from you.
Yeah. So to find me, magnagopal.com, just my first name and my last name. There are courses online. If you wanted to ever do private lessons, you could also reach out to me. We can coordinate, find a way to do that. And if you're interested about any of the QFIT stuff that I was talking about, that's also available online. I think the entire 60 days of workouts is available as a packaged course. And I'll tell you, out of all the things that I've done to stay fit, I've worked out in the gym, I've done boxing, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, like, and dancing all the time, QFIT is the fittest I've ever felt. And that was with the least amount of equipment. So if that's something you want. And then a closing thought would be just take agency of your life and of your happiness and of your growth. Because it doesn't matter how much information is out there in this world, if you don't want something, if you are not actively seeking to be better in some way, it doesn't matter how much information is out there, you will never get there. Because no one can make you take the step. Everyone can open a door for you. Everyone can show you the path. Everyone can give you a map and give you step-by-step navigations, but you must take the step. And that is an absolute non-negotiable. Okay? So taking agency of ourselves, key. If you are a student in this space, it's important to make sure that you are asking questions. If you can, ask questions in classes. I, as an instructor, appreciate it. I think most instructors that I know appreciate it. If they don't, that is not a reflection on you asking a question. It's just a reflection on them, and you don't need to concern yourself, but it's good that you ask the question, because we prepare and present based on the experiences that we have. We do not know your experience until you share it with us. So ask questions. And then three is get curious about every moment that you have about the people that are in front of you, because life is always changing. There's no second that repeats itself. Complacency is a choice. And there's so much beauty in and around us if we just explored it a little bit. Just looked at someone and said, I wonder what's different about you today. You know, I wonder what's going to be different about us today. And then my last point is start asking yourself, what if I was wrong? You know, what if I was wrong? What if I am wrong about this? What if whatever I think is not exactly how it is, or it's not the complete picture? Because I'm pretty certain it isn't. There's always two sides, and then there's also the truth or the reality. So oftentimes we limit ourselves in what kind of solutions we can come up with, what kind of steps we can take, just because we can't see the problem from all angles. So question things, question yourself, reflect often, stay curious, and put connection with another human being at the forefront of everything that you do, because life is richer with people and relationships, also with like plants and animals and nature. But we have people, right? And we're social dancers here. So people. So let's talk about people. Life is richer when you have when you try to build those relationships with people.
I'm going to thank you so much for your time,
sure,
for your perspective, and for your knowledge. It was amazing.
I am glad to have made it. This is so formal. We gave hugs, but I think if we gave each other a hug right now, there would be some tripping. But this is not how we met, with a handshake. Thank you so much, Yuri. I appreciate everything that you do. I really liked our first live interview. It was great. I think as an interviewer, you are excellent. You provide some very good open-ended questions that allows the interviewee to think about things differently, and you pay such close attention to the answers to then pull even more out of that person. So you do a great job, and to be here with all of you and to be here in person with you and finally meet you in person is great. I'm glad we got a chance to make this work.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.